Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan?
Yes, hi.
Yeah, I would just have a question for you. My wife is constantly cold all the time. It could be 80 degrees in the house, but she still has to be covered. What can be done about that, and what's she missing in her diet or something?
Well, I don't know what she's missing in her diet, but there is one particular tissue that's a very interesting tissue that's completely in charge of temperature regulation. So that's where I would start. So there is a gland called the hypothalamus. Half of it resides within the brain, and half of it resides outside the brain, which means it's both inside the blood-brain barrier and outside the blood-brain barrier, and it's such an interesting gland to study. So the hypothalamus continually measures all hormone levels throughout the body. It's completely what regulates appetite. So as just one side point, if a person says they have zero appetite whatsoever and they just don't even care for food, and there can be a lot of reasons behind that, like treatment with chemotherapy and drugs and radiation treatments, especially like if somebody's had like a brain cancer and they've been treated with radiation, well, in my mind, well, that would get us right there to the hypothalamus, and it may kind of destroy it a bit or cause it to weaken. But the hypothalamus, in my mind, is the key when someone is very cold like that. So one thing that can be done is just consuming hypothalamus extract. That would be an animal-based supplement. So if you can find an animal-based glandular that contains hypothalamus, that is what you would be looking for.
And whereabouts could you find that at the granary or someplace like that?
Well, you're going to have to ask around and just search it out. But there's plenty of companies. They make what are called protomorphogen glandulars that are based on the hypothalamus.
Okay. And how about iron in a person's diet? Can they get too much iron or not enough iron?
Yeah, it can be both ways. It can be too little iron that could produce anemia, and it can be too much iron, which would be hemochromatosis, which is any time that you have too much iron and it starts to contact with water, it starts to rust, so it gives off oxidation. That's not good because it generates free radicals. That's one of the reasons why when men have too much iron, they start to go downhill hormonally.
Uh-huh.
But when they give blood or donate blood in the form of a blood transfusion, all of a sudden they start to rejuvenate because they have an outlet for ridding the body of uh-huh. excess iron, because iron is a metal and it will rust if it's in excess.
Would you spell that stuff, that word to look for her?
Okay, the word hypo is H-Y-P-O.
H-Y-P-O.
G-L? No. H-Y-P-O, like hypo, like a hypodermic needle.
Okay, H-Y-P-O.
And then it's really just one word. I'm just trying to break it down for you. But thalamus is T-H-A-L-A-M-U-S, thalamus.
L-A-M-U-S?
Hypothalamus.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But hypothalamus is what you're looking at. I totally forgot the direction I was going because I was going to go back to temperature. Oh, yeah, I know where I was going now. There's a very old school test, and it's going to sound too simplistic, but let me just tell you how it works, all right? I'm going to suggest to you, if your wife can stand on one foot with her eyes closed and maintain great balance for 30 seconds, that I'm completely wrong about all this. You can just disregard it and say, Dr. Morgan doesn't have a clue what he's talking of, so I'm going to go to the medical doctor, and what we're going to do is we're going to get crack cocaine, because I've heard that really heats the body up. I'm just joking about that. But if your wife can stand on one foot with her eyes closed for 30 seconds, then I don't know what I'm talking about. But if she attempts to stand on one foot with her eyes closed, and she loses her balance just real easily, you know what I'm referring to. She stands up and she just pulls one foot off the ground by maybe 3 or 4 inches, just in case she needs to set it back down to steady herself. But the other thing that I think of is... and I know this is probably a lot of stuff to get into, There is a substance produced by the cells of your body. The thymus gland produces it. It's called ribonucleic acid, or RNA. And that's actually one of the great theories of aging, meaning when we have a deficiency of RNA, what you see is tissues begin to weaken. They go downhill, including the hypothalamus. But RNA is critical for balance and for rejuvenation of the brain, and those glands in the brain that can that control and regulate temperature control.
I have another question for you.
Oh, okay.
I can't sleep very much. A couple hours and I wake up. What's a good thing to take to help me sleep?
You know, I'm going to ask you to ask the question differently. I want you to ask me what causes you to wake up every 2 hours.
Yeah, what causes me to wake up
thank you. I like that question better. If you are consuming more carbohydrates or sugar than what your body can handle and tolerate, that'll cause you to wake up every 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So is that possible that could be true?
I don't eat that much sugar or anything. I get sugar-free cookies and all that kind of stuff. But
Well, you're talking about the very thing that could poison the hypothalamus.
Really?
Yeah, because whether it's Splenda or NutraSweet or Equal or Saccharin, I guess I could keep going, but aspartame, all those substances have been shown to be very, very neurotoxic to the hypothalamus.
Oh, my goodness.
So you're doing my job for me today. Thank you very much.
I'm glad to know that. Now, how about melatonin? Would the melatonin help me a little bit?
Boy, I can tell which direction you're heading, aren't you? You can try it and see.
About 3 milligrams or 5?
I would do a half a milligram at the most if it was me.
I see, okay.
Unless you want to have a hangover. Now, if you want to have a hangover when you wake up in the morning and tell your wife, great, I took 3 milligrams of melatonin. I can't wake up until 11 o'clock.
Well, I sure appreciate all your...
You're welcome. Thank you for your phone call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think that phone call illustrates several really good points. You see how people are completely wired to... Instead of trying to find out why a condition is occurring, and this is nothing against the gentleman that called, very, very sweet, very thankful for the phone call, but can you see how we've been completely conditioned in our mind to, instead of trying to find out why we wake up every 2 hours, we're just interested in something like a remedy, which I'm all for that. I would rather ask the question, why is the pineal gland not producing sufficient amounts of melatonin? Why is the hypothalamus not working right? So, if your wife cannot hold her balance on 1 foot easily for 30 seconds with her eyes closed, then that would definitely be an indication that she doesn't have sufficient amounts of ribonucleic acid. And that is a substance that's needed by the body to rejuvenate and to repair and to maintain the health of the tissues. And so let me ask you a question. If you went to a doctor and the physician says, ma'am, we have the results of your blood test, and one of the things we measured is we measured your iron levels, and you say, well, how did you do that? And they say, well, ma'am, we drew your blood, and from the blood there's several markers we're looking at. One's called the red blood cell count. And so one of the things that we have in a laboratory assessment or a lab test is we have a normal range. And the normal range would be from here to here, and yours is way below the low end of normal. And you're going, what does that mean? Well, it points toward that you do not have enough red blood cells. Well, could that be the reason why I'm cold? Oh, yes, because without red blood cells, you can't hold hemoglobin, which is a protein that's in the red blood cells, and you can't transport oxygen. And you go, I get it. In order for me to be warm and to produce energy, I have to have enough blood to transport oxygen so I can stoke the fire. I said stroke the fire. I meant stoke the fire. You know what I meant. And you're going, yeah, that's great. Well, with RNA deficiency, it's very common for people to have really cold hands and really cold feet. So if I'm out in public and I shake hands, 50 times at church, I know whose hands are freezing cold and I know whose aren't. It's kind of interesting to me, though, that in nature, there are some foods that have such a high, generous amount of RNA that you would think, is this by happenstance? And I would say, oh no, that is not by happenstance. The Sovereign Lord created sardines to have a naturally high occurrence of ribonucleic acid. Do you like the word rejuvenation? Do you like the word healing? Do you like high vitality, vim, vigor, energy? Would you like to feel good? Well, you need RNA to do that. And it is the hallmark of every disease process that when you have less than adequate RNA, guess what happens? You don't heal and you don't repair. So do that test to yourself. Stand on one foot with your eyes closed for 30 seconds. If you maintain reasonably good balance and you can do it, just disregard everything I'm saying right now. But if you cannot, then maybe we need to look at this differently. Maybe there's something that's lacking. Maybe you're deficient in the very substances that lead to healing and repair. Or if you want to say it differently, what can I do to maintain my health? Well, this is a very good question. And I'm pretty sure you will not find that answer by which drug am I deficient in, because drugs don't do anything to provide nutrients. So, there you have it. Okay. Let me see, where's my reference for this one right here? This comes from Dr. McCullough. Okay. Anyway. I always imagine that Dr. McCullough has a team of researchers constantly scouring journals and released new information to find out relevant topics to study, so I'm taking advantage of him today. It is a well-recognized fact that high sugar consumption and obesity are linked to an increased risk of cancer. And obesity has been linked to an increased risk of death from all causes. That's just food for your consideration or for your thought today. One recent finding showed that excess body weight is responsible for 1 in 5 premature deaths in the U.S. Clearly, sugary processed foods exact a hefty price on our nation's health. When eaten in excess, sugar results in increased cellular oxidation, causing mitochondrial and nuclear DNA damage, as well as cell membrane and protein impairment. I know you don't know what I was really saying earlier, or maybe you grasp a little bit of it, but without your chromosomes or your genes generating RNA, no healing can take place. And so here's what I want you to consider. This is just me making commentary before. I'm not reading the article now. When you eat sugar, it breaks down in a very dirty way in the body. And that dirt produces oxidants, which generates lots of free radicals. Thus, you have heard, maybe I should take an antioxidant, because that quenches free radicals, or it puts out the fire of oxidation. Yeah. Sugary foods also promote insulin resistance. And insulin resistance is at the heart of most chronic diseases, including cancer. This is because cancer cells are primarily fueled by the burning of sugar. That may be a point for your consideration today, folks. Because without sugar, most cancer cells simply lack the metabolic flexibility to survive. Recent research has also shown that a growing number of obese Americans have poor blood sugar control, which in turn promotes type 2 diabetes and associated health conditions. Even pre-diabetes is a risk factor for cancer. What they're saying is, if your blood sugar is 99 to 105, that's pre-diabetes right there. More than 1 in 3 Americans aged 20 and older has pre-diabetes, a condition in which glucose, or your blood sugar, levels are higher than normal, but not yet high enough to be diagnosed as full-blown diabetes. How can we protect ourselves from such life-altering diseases? Well, if you're overweight, the first step is to make a permanent change in a diet that leads to a dramatic weight loss. One of the most effective approaches is to eat a diet that replaces excess carbohydrates with moderate amounts of high-quality protein and high amounts of beneficial fats. This kind of diet will help normalize your weight and boost your general health. Is anyone in the radio audience interested in that? There may be one or two, right? Okay. To reduce the risk of cancer and many other diseases, cut way down on sugar, fructose, and grain-based carbohydrates. You need to replace them with high-quality fats such as olive oil, coconut oil, raw nuts, avocados, and grass-fed meats. For carbohydrates, try berries, cauliflower, and root vegetables. And for protein, choose grass-fed or pastured meats and animal products. When you switch from burning glucose as your primary fuel to burning fat, healthy cells are given an ideal and preferred fuel, which lowers oxidative damage, that means free radicals, that's what destroys your cells, and it optimizes mitochondrial function. What that really means is you all of a sudden will have energy. If you do not have energy, ask yourself, do I need more energy? Do I want more? I think I know the answer to that, because I tend to believe everything that people tell me when they're sitting in front of me and they're explaining how they have no energy. The sum effect is that healthy cells begin to thrive while cancer cells are starved to death. But the beautiful aspect of this is you have energy. Quick story. 72, 73-year-old man. He's very physically fit. His diet is just perfect, with one exception. His blood sugar levels are running just a little bit above 100, maybe even on a good day in the upper 90s. He has a very, very strong force of will, very disciplined. Those are qualities that I really, really admire and I would want to emulate or imitate myself. But the problem is, he's starting to become pre-diabetic. He tried just one simple modification to his diet. He cut out the honey, which honey would be fructose. And the truth is, some people are even a bit intolerant to fructose. It's just a little bit too much for them. And so he tried cutting out honey, and guess what happened? His blood sugar, or blood glucose, went from the low 100s down to the 80s in just a very short period of time. And he's very pleased with himself, and I am pleased with him also. All right. Article number 2 today, and I think this completely ties into what I just first read about sugar. You know what the main problem that I probably face is that most people are actually in denial. They are. They just think that eating 25 Milky Ways a day is pretty much okay, and drinking 7 soft drinks, because it's really not that much sugar, according to them. Well, let me read this article to you. This one's called The Power of a Ketogenic Diet. It comes from, here it is right here. Ketogenic Diet's a Key to Excellent Health by Ellen Davis. And that came from the Wellbeing Journal, July, August 2012. I may have read some of it to you back then. All right. You may not have heard the term ketogenic. That's spelled K-E-T-O and then G-E-N-I-C. Ketogenic. So the word keto has meaning, and the word genic refers to Genesis. Anyway, ketogenic diets are those in which fats provide most of the calories. Actually, let me start over here. Please forgive me. Let me give you my short background on this. If you have severe arthritis, if you have no energy, if you're severely overweight, if you have a diagnosis of diabetes, if you have cancer, if you suffer degenerative neurological conditions such as Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, epileptic seizures, severe depression, tremendous pain, inflammation throughout the body, chronic reflux, heartburn, acid indigestion, irritable bowel syndrome, autoimmune diseases. I just want y'all to pay attention. If you are perfect, meaning there's no possible chance for improvement, then you can just pretty much flip the radio off and go twiddle your thumbs, or you could watch Saturday morning cartoons or the Three Stooges. You don't need to listen to what I'm saying. But if you're like everybody else, myself included, this may be information for you that you might like. So here goes. Ketogenic diets are those in which fats provide most of the calories. Did you get that? Carbohydrates, which would be sugars and starches, are severely limited. And protein intake is just moderate. It's not high protein, and it's certainly not low protein. The term ketogenic refers to the fact that when the body metabolizes fat for fuel, ketone bodies are created through ketogenesis. Ketone bodies are fragments of fatty acids created when your liver and kidney cells metabolize fats. Your cells can use ketones for fuel, and if fat burning is increased, it results in ketosis, which is an elevated level of ketones in the bloodstream. Ketogenic diets are powerful, metabolically speaking. Switching to a high-fat, low-carbohydrate ketogenic diet can eliminate heartburn. You know, that's really the image I had in my mind, folks. I'm really considering all the people that just suffer from horrible heartburn. Do you really need to have acid burning your esophagus over and over again? Do you need to have Barrett's esophagitis, which can lead to esophageal cancer? Do you need to have chronic heartburn where you're needing a prescription of omeprazole or Zantac or just fill in the blank? No. Ketogenic diets can eliminate heartburn, improve cardiac risk factors. By the way, if you come to see me Monday morning and you say I'm in heart failure, they want to do a heart transplant. Of course, I keep thinking somebody's going to come into my office one day and say the doctor's recommending a brain transplant. So far, that hasn't happened. A ketogenic diet is maybe the only dietary regimen that's going to heal your heart. If you want to reverse elevated blood pressure, high blood sugar, lipid problems, and metabolic syndrome, and high cholesterol, maybe you should listen to this. And you're going to say, well, Dr. Morgan, I've never heard this information before. Well, you're hearing it now. And so I'll just try to be very slow and deliberate and gentle. But just consider this. This is for your consideration. Now, I realize there's a few people on the planet that are perfect. I just don't know any of them. In addition, research has shown that the metabolic effects of eating more fats and less carbohydrates can alleviate many other serious health issues. Medical researchers and some physicians are using ketogenic diets to reduce the tremors of Parkinson's disease. Oh boy, now I like that. So here's a technique to reduce tremors. I can't make this up, folks. It helps Alzheimer's patients regain memory and cognitive function. It drives various cancers into remission. Do you like that word, remission? Would you like your physician to say, Mrs. Johnson, your cancer is in remission? And you say, I could have told you that, doctor, before you told me your test result findings. I knew I was in remission because I had a peace that passes understanding. It gives diabetics a better control over their blood sugar and lipid profiles and improve epilepsy treatment outcomes. Let me ask you a question. Do you know anyone that suffered horribly from epileptic seizures? Oh, well, it's just not great, is it? No. What is the most successful remedy? Well, that would be a ketogenic diet. How can a simple diet have so much power? The secret is in the effect that eating ketogenically has on blood sugar and insulin, and ultimately the cellular energy process. You ask me, Dr. Morgan, how can I have more energy? Well, I can tell you how you'll have less energy. If you want less energy long term, then eat sugar. Oh yes, I am completely aware that if you're tired and you shovel in a couple of dozen donuts and a Coke and a Red Bull and smoke some cigarettes and take a little bit more caffeine, sure, you'll have energy, but it's not going to last. Sure, you can cause your adrenal glands. You can whip them really hard with stimulants. That's called methamphetamines, cocaine, and sugar, and caffeine. You can whip them, and they will release adrenaline, and you'll have a momentary boost. But the problem is, where there's a rise, there's a fall, or what I should say is, your energy is going to crash. Eating foods that are high in carbohydrates leads to increased reactive oxygen species. Folks, that's just a fancy medical term for free radicals. That means when you eat sugar, you're generating a whole bunch of free radicals. And guess what that leads to? That's our word for today. The word for today, class, is inflammation. Inflammation, that's what sugar does. It increases inflammation. Is inflammation bad? Not always. Not if it leads to healing and repair. But when it's in excess, oh yes, that's when it's problematic. Because sugar, or foods are high in sugar, they lead to an increase in the amount of glucose and insulin in the bloodstream. And this is the main problem with high carbohydrate diets. While glucose is important fuel for the body, too much of it circulating in the bloodstream can harm body systems. How much is too much? Typically, you're probably going to have a hard time believing this, but it's the truth. Typically, a healthy individual will have less than 1 teaspoon of sugar dissolved in the bloodstream at any one time. Did you get that? That's 1 teaspoon. You probably thought I was going to say a pint of sugar, didn't you? Well, this is not a car engine that holds 5 quarts of oil or 5 quarts of sugar. You would be dead. Compare that to a typical canned soft drink, which contains about 10 teaspoons of sugar, or a bagel, which breaks down into about 16 teaspoons of sugar in the bloodstream. See, that's right. Starches are broken down into sugar. So a bagel has 16 teaspoons of sugar that hits the bloodstream. These high-carbohydrate foods provide much more glucose than the human body can handle efficiently. And so blood glucose is basically liquid sugar. And if you've ever spilled fruit juice or syrup on your hands, well, you know how sticky it is. In the body, this stickiness is called glycation. Glycation is a process in which excess blood sugar sticks to and damages the proteins of the body tissues. This is what your body is made of. It's made of amino acids and proteins. So you tell me, sticky sugar sticking to proteins, do proteins work properly, or all of a sudden do they become erratic and they fail to do what God designed them to do? Yeah, you know the answer to that. These injured proteins stop functioning correctly, and the result is a chain of events that increases inflammation and creates substances called advanced glycation end products, AGEs. AGEs interfere with cellular function and are linked to the progression of many diseases, including heart attacks, heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, cancer, autism, Alzheimer's. What have you got to lose, folks? You know, it's perfectly fine with me if you show up at your doctor's office on Monday morning and say, "Doctor, what can I do to restore my health? How can I reverse my type 2 diabetes? What can I do to reverse a fatty liver? How can I rid my body of irritable bowel syndrome? What's the root cause of it? Why am I having periventricular contractions? Why do I have heart arrhythmia?" Don't you think those are good questions? And I understand. I mean, I don't really have to be that smart. Somebody walks in my door and says, I have a diagnosis of irritable bowel syndrome. And my response is, well, what does your doctor say, or nurse practitioner, or physician's assistant, or nurse, or GI doctor? Aren't gastroenterologists the top doctors to deal with this issue? You know, I've read before that 20% of all office visits at doctors' offices are all around IBS. Well, okay, they're not going to answer that. Well, if they do, it may be like, I don't know, but here's a drug you take for it. Let me ask you a question. Do you really think that a drug really cures a disease, or do you think that maybe it just suppresses the symptoms you're having? What if your body is communicating to you through gut cramps and spasms? What do you think the body's saying? It's saying there's something here that we don't like. But you don't want to entertain that question. What you want to entertain is, no, I mean, people don't do this. People don't say, is there a drug that a doctor could prescribe for me, even though it will lead to Parkinson's disease and I'll lose my mind and memory and I'll develop Parkinson's, I'm going to go ahead and take the drug. Folks, I couldn't make this stuff up if I wanted to. If you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open. The number here is 903-586-5257. Today's a good day to ask questions. It's raining outside. It's cooler. It feels beautiful. I love it. I wish I could do this radio program out in the rain right now. The only problem is drops of rain on the umbrella would probably, make a little bit too much noise. I think it'd sound cool, though. If you want to call me on the radio right now, there is a phone line officially open. If you'll call in right now, 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. If no one wants to call, we're going to keep covering some good topics here. This comes from Herbal Medicine, Healing and Cancer, a comprehensive program for prevention and treatment by Donald R. Yance. Somebody's calling, so that's more important. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hello.
I had a question about the ketogenic diet and people that don't have a gallbladder. Do you think that a person without a gallbladder...
It's even better. It works even better for that.
It works better. Okay.
Well, I mean, as opposed to the other choice of if a doctor says, you know what, now that the gallbladder has been removed, we got to be careful about how much fat. The better question is, well, what type of fat should I avoid and what type of fat should I eat? And so I'm sort of making a joke by saying this, but if somebody placed in front of you some deep-fried pepperoni wedges or potatoes, that may not be the type of fat that's good for you, because it's just plant-based oils that don't really agree with the gallbladder or the bile duct anyway. So, but if you said, what would happen if I challenged my body with avocados or coconut oil or olive oil or the type of fat that comes from cold ocean water fish like salmon, I would say those would all be very healthy oils that would actually help your bile duct work better.
Okay.
The one thing that you may need, or if you're calling about somebody else, the one thing that your friend or relative might need, is you may need to add bile salts to your diet.
Ox bile.
Yeah, you got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that can help pick up the slack if you have had your gallbladder removed, because basically, now that your gallbladder is removed, it's going to be your common bile duct that essentially takes over the role of becoming your new gallbladder. So to me, it's almost more critical. But you know the way that I really want to say this? If we have a diet that's mainly based on carbohydrates, then what we're doing is we're generating a lot of inflammation. And when you have inflamed organs, they eventually start to break down and give off symptoms. That's at that point when organs are dying is when you have symptoms every single time. But I would say the reverse of that is, while sugar burns very, very dirty in the body, fat burns very, very clean. It does not give off free radicals and oxidants if it's a clean oil. Now, if it's a rancid oil, yeah, you're going to have a problem. So if you go to Chick-fil-A and they haven't changed the peanut oil in 2 years, you're going to get sick every time you eat the chicken nuggets fried in peanut oil.
Yeah. No, thank you.
But the nice thing about it is if you eat an avocado that's just in perfect condition to be eaten, I seriously doubt you're going to tell me there's any major issues, because it's going to be very soothing and very complimentary to your bile duct.
Yes.
Yeah, but I've used that many times, and I think a ketogenic diet is something that you can kind of ease into when the gallbladder's been removed, and I've seen great results. Because, you know what? What if you reversed all this and said, Dr. Morgan, what do you believe is the number one reason why a gallbladder fails? And I would have to say it's because of excessive consumption of carbohydrates and sugar. Because if you're eating high sugar, you're not getting enough fat to allow the gallbladder to work properly. So, do you drink coffee at all?
Coffee?
Yeah.
Yes.
What if you started putting a tablespoon of coconut oil in your coffee in the morning?
I do.
You do?
I do.
I could tell you were a radical woman. The moment you called, I knew it.
Well, yeah, I drink bulletproof coffee every day.
Do you think that helps?
I do.
Okay.
It saps my appetite a little bit, so
good.
I can do intermittent fasting.
Good, and that's what you want.
And it is soothing, actually, I think, to my stomach.
Good choice of words. I like that. I hope other people are listening to what you're saying.
Sounds good. I'll stick to my ox file and keep doing it.
Okay, thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Have a good day. Bye-bye. Okay, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257, 903-586-5257. Alrighty, this is an article called Healing in Cancer, a Comprehensive Program for Prevention and Treatment by Donald Yance, Jr. I don't know Donald Yance, Jr., but I like his name. Okay, I lied to you. I'm going to the phones. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
I was calling because my daughter has been diagnosed with ADHD, and I've tried different things with her diet, like taking away food dyes and sugar and giving her like a high-protein diet. But I'm wondering if there's any supplements that I could be giving her.
The two things that I want to consider is there any possibility or chance that she's had some type of a head trauma or injury to her brain?
No.
You probably would have known if she tried to fly off the top of a two-story house and landed on her head, but that didn't happen,
yeah.
Did it?
No.
Has she had vaccines?
Yes, very few.
Okay.
And we didn't start at all until after she was two. The only thing, too, I guess, with the head trauma, I guess when she was born, she was, I don't know if that would have anything to do with it or be part of that, like in the birth canal for a very long time.
Well, and I don't know the answer to that either, but it certainly is a possibility.
Yeah.
Would you believe me if I told you there's a lot of times all I can do is look at a person and say, this is what it seems to be, but we don't have any way to explain how it got there.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a person walks in the door and they, let's just say, and this might be changing the topic slightly, so please forgive me. What if we have a test like a hair mineral analysis? And it comes back and it shows there's high levels of mercury. Well, I mean, I can do reverse engineering. I can say, okay, let me think here. What would be a high source of mercury? And I could start going through possibilities and say, all right, as far as I know, the biggest source of mercury of all time that could come in contact with the body is going to come with the mercury that's in vaccines. If the person tells me, but I haven't been vaccinated, I'm going to say, well, okay, that doesn't explain it, but let's go on to point two. Maybe they have silver amalgam fillings that contain mercury. And they go, but Dr. Morgan, I don't have any silver amalgam fillings. But still, I'm left with the same starting point. There's high levels of mercury. And what do we do about that, even though I may not be able to explain it? So I think you're bringing up a good point about the birth canal. But all I can say is if I had a child that had ADD or ADHD, these would be the following considerations. All I would do is just observe the child, and I would ask myself, is there any possibility that the child's behavior or focus or concentration was better prior to vaccines? The only one that matters is mother right now, because nobody knows anything about a child like a mother does.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm kind of telling on myself right now at this point, but I can tell you right now, my wife, she understands everything that's going on with a baby. Everything.
Yeah.
I could say, well, what do I do? She says, Roy, that means the baby needs a diaper change. I'm going, oh, okay. And sure enough, she's right every time. So all that matters is that you can say yes or no, or you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the things that I always think of with ADD or ADHD is there's a possibility that something is a cause of irritation or inflammation.
Yes.
And so even if I don't know what that is right now, what would we do about that?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If this were my child, at the very least, I would probably go through protocols that would help repair the brain. And I realize there's going to be some people that hear what I say and they're just going to go ballistic and bonkers. But I'm going to give you some fun little experiments.
Okay.
There is a B vitamin-like compound called inositol. You ever heard of inositol?
No, I haven't. Can you spell it for me?
Oh, great. I have to spell things today? I didn't know that was part of the deal. Let me write down here.
Okay. Sorry.
Got it. I'm just joking. I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L.
Okay.
I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. That sounds better. Inositol.
Okay.
And let me just suggest that inositol has a very interesting ability in children to help improve brain activity. Does it make it worse? No. Does it improve brain function? Yes. But I would also say the same thing that, let me ask you if you believe what I'm saying or not. Okay. If there were no water in the brain, actually, let's just say, what is the brain made of? It's made of fat. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Did you know that mother's breast milk is exactly, I can't remember now, is it 52% pure fat or 54%?
I don't know, but it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Over half of all the calories that come in mother's breast milk is going to be fat.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, very important to know that. So that's what your brain's made of. So the type of fat that you put into the child's mouth or that you give the child makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so one simple thing that you could do is you could try and experiment by letting your child chew up inositol tablets that feeds brain cells. The other thing that you could do is you give the child a high-quality fish oil.
Okay.
In the world, I'm not trying to be cynical at all. I probably am. In the real world, this is what you're looking at. You could ask yourself, well, what would be a good fish oil? Well, instead of me telling you every brand name or brand name to avoid, what I would say is if you have some old styrofoam laying around, let's just do an experiment in your home. And the experiment goes as such. You take the fish oil that you're using or giving a child, and you just put it on styrofoam. Wait about 30 minutes and see if it eats a hole in it. If it starts to dissolve the styrofoam, that is the form of fish oil called the ethyl ester form. And I think that there's a growing body of research and inflammation demonstrating that the ethyl ester form of fish oil is not really well received by brain cells of a child. It may not be well absorbed. It may actually generate some problems. Now, what would I do if a person walked in the door and said, I love the Walmart brand of fish oil. I've just got to take it because it only costs 10 cents. Well, if they're doing well, I don't know that I spend a lot of time arguing with them about that. I just don't. But the form that's found in nature that seems to be really, really good for a developing brain is the triglyceride form. So when you put the liquid fish oil on styrofoam, it's in the triglyceride form.
Mm-hmm.
It does not dissolve styrofoam. That's just the simplest way. But the ethyl ester form, that's probably the form that when people take it, they're just constantly burping and belching it. Would that be fun for you to burp up fish oil all day?
Oh, no.
Long?
No.
No, it wouldn't be fun at all.
No.
And so we've got to feed the brain. But that's one thing that I would personally look for. If it were my child, I would look for the presence of toxins. And so it's not a panacea, but a hair analysis may be one way. So I'm not trying to overstate everything that it's capable of doing. I'm just saying for $39, you can do a hair analysis and just see, is there any potential accumulation of toxic metals? Now, this is just short and sweet and to the point. Aluminum doesn't do good for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I checked, lead usually causes brain problems. So where there's a lead smelter, if you live within a 5-mile radius, you're probably going to have an IQ around 85. And I don't know if you know much about IQs or intelligent quotient, but if someone's tested and their IQ is 85, they're not in regular schools.
Yeah.
They actually have prisons built, you know, here in Cherokee County, the Hodge unit in Skyview. That's where people go when they have low IQs, because if you take somebody with an IQ of 85 and you put them in with the regular prison population, that will be the individual that's completely taken advantage of by the people that have IQs of 95 or 100. Although the former director of mental health of the state of Texas is a patient of mine, and I'm crazy about the guy. He's just so funny. We probably spend the whole visit laughing nonstop when he comes in, so that may not be real productive on my part. But anyway, he tells me, he said, yeah. He says, but I'll be the first one to admit those people have IQs around 70, 75. Sometimes they fooled and tricked me before. But, you know, they may be able to use some of it. But so lead, mercury, arsenic, cadmium, aluminum, those are easy things to measure and look for. And they have such a high natural affinity for the hair. So, I don't know, run it by your medical doctor, see what they think. If they can come up with a better plan, bingo, I'm all for it. Chances are, anyway, I'll leave that comment open. So we're looking at trying to nourish and feed, but what I want to figure out is there anything or is there any possibility that this child has something that's causing a major disruption or inflammation? And so this is the entire topic of food. And so I'll just break it down. I'm going to see two or three people a year. They have the most bizarre neurological symptoms of all time. And I can tell you right now, it's going to be related to corn consumption. So you can take it all with a grain of salt, but I'm going to have two patients a year that if they want to resolve bizarre, weird behavior and thoughts, we got to get rid of the corn. So all I'm suggesting is there is a catastrophic inflammatory response or irritation produced when these unique people ingest corn. For other people, it could easily be wheat, or it could be dairy, or it could be consumption of sugar. And I would say maybe rarely also, it may be the nightshade family. That could be tomatoes. I've seen so many kids react horribly to aspartame, which is like an artificial man-made sweetener. I've seen so many kids just react horribly to MSG. I might be the best person to talk about that, because when I was in my 20s, before you can say, Dr. Morgan, how long ago was that? I'm going to cut you off and say, I don't even remember. It was too long ago. But when I was in my 20s, I actually thought, you know what? I am just the best father of all time because I'm taking my kids to Chick-fil-A for breakfast on Saturday morning. I know. But you know what? I've used every opportunity. I can learn from anything, all right? And I think that I can learn from anyone. That's why I like reading what other people say, and I like listening to lectures. But that makes me a weirdo, I know. But okay, I'm peace with that. But MSG is a secret ingredient in the Chick-fil-A chicken nugget. And so I found out with one daughter the reason why she had headaches as a little girl. And so I'm ashamed to say it took me about 3 months to figure that one out. But, you know, sometimes if you do not get a good result. But isn't that what symptoms are? Aren't they telling us that something's not working right?
Yeah.
So that's probably the simple things that I would do. So I know this is just like I'm making it sound too simple. But with ADD, we feed the brain or remove anything that's poisoning the brain. That's a solution right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been talking to my daughter's doctor, and I have a fabulous doctor who's willing to work with me and try different things, but she's like, just go to the health food store and try something. So I'm
but she's agreeable, but that means she hasn't a clue where to start, except maybe there's a solution in the natural realm, which that's good.
Yeah, which I'm glad she hasn't tried to pressure me into just putting her on medication.
Oh, I know. Children probably need crack cocaine, don't they?
Ugh.
That would solve a lot.
Yeah, I didn't want to just put a Band-Aid on it. I'm like, the symptoms are because something is wrong. So I'm like, I want to find out what's wrong with her. And
well, the good news is this is completely solvable if you want to.
Yeah. Okay,
Can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah.
Okay, this is not relevant to you, but it's a story that happened to me, I'm going to say, about 15, 16, 17 years ago. I had a mother bring her son to me, and I'm going to see if I can remember it properly. She said, he does horrible in math. He's homeschooled. It's just torture getting through his math class. He just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And so when I examined the child, that seemed to be the one thing that he showed the greatest weakness toward was wheat. And so I'm just going to tell you, the results were over the top. All of a sudden, the kid starts just really getting math, and he's on board. And I'm telling you, it is so impressive. And this child had autism. Now, great results. Mom's happy. They just can't believe how good the kid is doing. But let me tell you the second part of the story. The child, I won't mention his name, had a best friend, and his best friend was the same age, and he had autism also, just like him. So they got along together. If you have autism, it's probably nice that you have somebody else on your level. And so the other parent of the other autistic child was so impressed with the results that she brought her son to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a hair analysis, and it came back that the child had very, very high levels of mercury, but I'm going to tell you, the results were horrible. And here's how it worked. The mother told me she did not believe that the hair analysis could be accurate, that the child could have high mercury. She didn't conceptually understand how that was possible. And so you understand how I roll. I'm going, even though we can't make sense of it, ma'am, it's still there. We still have to deal with it, even though it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so the child's diet in the morning was a Dr. Pepper for breakfast.
Oh.
Super chocolate cocoa bombs with extra sugar, probably. Cokes for lunch, Pepsi for supper. But anyway, this just goes on and on. I'm just trying to explain to the mom. But none of what I said even registered. It was too painful because, well, I'll let you fill in the blank. But it was not a success. But it wasn't for lack of trying. Oh, yeah. Believe me, I try with everybody. Believe me, I try.
Yeah.
But it was just completely, all that stuff was just rejected. And as far as I know, nothing ever happened. But can you see how, unless you're willing to kind of open your mind and consider a different approach, then yeah, that's what you got. Anyway,
yeah.
So I have with those two people, I have a 50-50 success rate. But basically, all I can do is be the messenger. And I can try to be a good physician and point out where the weaknesses are or where the toxicity is. And if you've ever seen pictures of brain cells when a young child is drinking Coca-Cola, it will shock you. And I showed those to this mother. But you know what she told me? She said, I do not believe you. And that was the end of it. So no chance to nourish the child's brain. No chance to give the child a real successful go at life. I just hate to break it to you. If we did surveys on the most successful people that really rise to the occasion and have very productive lives, it ain't going to be on 12 Mountain Dews a day. I'm pretty sure about that. But I do thank you very, very much for your phone call, and you are just the best grandmother of all time. And I've got to ask you one more question. What's your grandmother name?
I'm Mom, actually.
Oh, so you're not the grandmother. You're
the
mother.
No.
Okay, well, I heard that wrong. Forgive me.
It's okay.
So what's your favorite mom name?
Mom.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for your phone call, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Oh, boy. Would you like to join me on the radio? There's about 5 minutes left. Time goes by so fast. All right, good morning to you. You've got 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right.
We'll shoot real fast and quick.
Well, you're going to have to choke up on the mic and turn your radio down.
I've got it all the way off.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Sea salt. You'd mentioned something at one point in time about, and, well, I'm not sure exactly what you mentioned about, but I'm going to read. I'm looking at one of mine, Eden sea salt, hand-harvested French Celtic.
Oh, yeah, that's good stuff. That's awesome. Yeah, that's better than okay. That's super awesome.
Coconut oil. Do you know I found one that had been set aside still in the grocer's bag? Do you know if that's got an expiration type date in regards to it?
Everything does. And, you know, if you told me that your grandmother in her will and willed you a jar of coconut oil from 1901,
sure,
I'm going to guess that's spoiled by now.
Okay.
But unless it was kept at the North Pole in deep ice, then it might be fine.
Okay. Never been used. Lid on very tight. If I can't find an expiration date on it, is there something that I should be able, once I open the lid,
of
to look
course.
At?
Of course. I am recommending that you smell it if it smells good, and I'm going to recommend that you taste it. And two things can happen. Either it's going to be very good and agreeable to you, and it's going to be easily digested because it's in good shape, or you're going to have burping and belching and projectile diarrhea. But either way, how does that affect me if you have diarrhea? It's not going to.
No. I think you're on the right track. Let's don't do that. Man can't go very far when. So the smell and taste combo.
Yeah.
Okay.
As that.
You had mentioned people. You can buy this. Some of the stores. This is a dental hygiene problem, not the gum treatments from the sesame oil and that type thing.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned something, a product that is.
Yeah, it's the brand called.
It's a product that people either like a gel or a mouthwash that you've had high success with.
Oh, let me think. Just give me a second.
If you can remember this week, otherwise I can call you back.
Oh, please, give me just a second. Let me think here.
Absolute, Doc.
Oh, let me think. Okay, I got it. I just came to me.
Okay, sir.
For the last 30 seconds, I couldn't think of it, and all of a sudden now, I did think of it. It's called The Natural Dentist for Healthy Gums. That was a tough one. I'm glad you brought that up.
The Natural Dentist.
Yeah.
For healthy gums.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
$7.
Pardon me, sir?
$7.
Oh, that's excellent. And then the very last thing, you had mentioned something in regards other than for inflammation fighters, other than ibuprofen and Tylenol for people that have to use that. These are for other people that I'm asking these questions. You had mentioned a homeopathic type of something of I forgot what that name is. Do you know what I would be referring to?
Arnica Montana.
I believe that was it. Is it just called Arnica Montana?
It's just called Arnica Montana.
You get an A today, Doc.
Oh, well, thank you.
You take care.
Well, thank you, buddy.
I want you to take care of the family. I want you to take care of Baby Ruth, and I want you to take care of Roseanne.
Do you know what Baby Ruth is... That's her favorite candy bar of all time.
I know.
If she were to go trick or treating,
you keep that sugar on the rooftop. You don't let it get in the house.
That's right. Way to go, buddy. Thank you very
God
much.
God bless you.
All right. Take care. Bye bye. All right. I've enjoyed being with you today. You're listening to Health Essentials on KBJS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyler Longview.